Nick Ashew on the Team 980, and yes, of course, it is the offseason for the NFL, but it's never really an offseason. And a lot riding on this season coming up and what goes on beforehand for the Commanders as well. We'll talk to Logan Paulson jumping on with me now. Of course, former tight end, host of the Take Command podcast, does a lot of work for the Commanders as well. We know this, Logan. Like there is a lot riding on certainly this season, the expectations, the improvements of the offense, the defense. You got new coordinators on both sides of the football. I mean, if you were to kind of like rank what position, what group, what coach, whatever, like has the most pressure on them right now, is there even somebody that kind of rises to the top? Because it feels like there's a lot of moving parts with really a lot of different parts of this team right now.
Yeah, I mean, I look at who the most important player on this roster is, and it's got to be Jaden Daniels. And obviously, look at the offensive coordinator, and it's David Blau. And so I'd say, like, he has the most, I'm going to say, responsibility, because, again, when you have a franchise quarterback, a lot of pressure is put on the offensive coordinator. And I think, you know, having some brief conversations with David Blau and looking at his history, I think he's more than ready for that challenge. But I do think when you look at the people that have the most pressure, the most responsibility, like, to me, it's the person that's going to foster the growth of the young quarterback. And so really it's David Blau, but really the entire staff that has that responsibility. And so, you know, obviously when you're looking at what they did in Detroit, what they're doing, what David Blau was exposed to in Minnesota, Detroit, and, you know, what he's kind of doing at OTAs, you kind of look at it through that lens, or at least I do, kind of saying, what does this do for Jaden Daniels, and how can they lay a foundation for him to be the best version of himself?
Now, obviously, he's going to be under center more. We know that that wasn't really the way the offense has been, certainly for him in his time in the NFL. How much of an advantage, how much of that do you look at and say this is going to make him better? How much of an adjustment is it going to be? Because it's definitely going to be different for him.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be different for him. But I look at, I mean, you just look around the league at the moment, and the teams that are kind of the best are the teams that I think run a little bit more under center. And one of the reasons they do that is I think it just makes it harder for defenses to get tells and get keys, because you're kind of in a more balanced formation. The back's right behind you. The ball fake on play action, on keepers, on pocket movement is a little bit more comprehensive, is a little bit longer. You can hide the football a little bit better. So I do think like one of the things that does is it allows you kind of some easy buttons. It allows you to kind of hit those big play action shots down the field. It creates windows at the second level of the defense, because those linebackers have to take another half step, or they have to hold for another half second before they can get to their spot drop. So I think some of that stuff for him is going to be huge, because again, in Cliff's offense, I think there are a lot of principles there that I liked and I think are good, and I think the NFL should adopt more of. But I think one of the limitations is that like it put a lot of pressure and a lot of onus on the quarterback to be special down in and down out. When you're under center or in this version of the NFL offense where you can use play action pass more, it gives you just something that's slightly easier than just kind of sitting back there, you know, three steps in the gun and reading the defense out. So I do think that's kind of what you're looking at here, is just kind of more opportunities to create simpler pictures for the quarterback. And again, under center is a feature of that, but to me, it's how the formations marry, how they look like run pass, and how they don't give these tells to the defense.
What do you think this run game is going to look like? Obviously, you've got a crowded running back room now. There were a lot of expectations on Bill last season. Again, not everybody's necessarily going to make the roster here, but they certainly got a lot of guys they want to at least try to see how they fit in this offense.
Yeah, the run game is going to be interesting. Schematically, I think it'll be interesting. Obviously, they haven't shown a ton of that at OTAs because they're in half shells and you don't really get to see it. But when you look at Detroit, for example, they were like a pretty heavy outside zone team. And like when you kind of look at the league, they're kind of moving back to more gap scheme run stuff, you know, powers, counters, GTs, you know, kind of what I would call bounces, where you're pulling the guard and tackle to get to the perimeter, stuff that creates hard alleys and clean run lanes for the running back. And I thought it was interesting that Detroit kind of leaned into this outside zone game a little bit more. And obviously Ben Johnson, when he goes to Chicago, kind of brings that with him. Kevin O'Connell comes from kind of the Sean McVay tree. They run a little bit more outside zone than normal. So I do think outside zone, just based on where David Blau's been from, will be kind of more outside zone based. But if you look at any good run scheme now, it's not, you can't just be like an outside zone team or a gas scheme team. You've got to kind of sprinkle in everything. Defenses are too good. They're too smart. So you got to kind of give them different looks and different runs to defend. And I think you'll see that. But I think if you're going to kind of say percentage wise, you know, maybe they're, you know, 15% outside zone, they're 12% gap scheme, they're, you know, 5% RPO, whatever that looks like, I think that's kind of how the percentages will shake out.
Logan, at what point are we going to see like a 25-year-old offensive coordinator? Like, it's just crazy how these guys are getting younger and younger and younger now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously, like, I think that's a concern because experience drives so much of offensive success and coaching success. But one of the things when you're with young coaches, like, I was really blessed to be on that staff in 2012 with, you know, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, Mike McDaniel, all those guys who are really young, smart people. And one of the things they bring, or the youth brings, is they're bringing innovation and they're bringing energy. And so, like, you know, obviously, like, when you're around the team now and David Blau's a young guy, David Rye's a young guy, there is an energy, there's an enthusiasm, which is important for players. And I think that coaching style is really effective. And I think, like, getting guys to engage with the concepts with that energy is super important. So I think, like, you know, to your point, I think if you get the right kind of guy who's 25 years old and has the right kind of energy, right kind of mindset, right kind of disposition, you know, there is a possibility, because that's the thing is right now football in a lot of ways is a young man's game, because you're looking for, like, that next wrinkle, that next innovation. And I think that also applies to coaches.
Yeah, I mean, it's now you're looking at coordinators that are rookie coordinators on both sides of the football here. And, you know, listen, I think we can probably agree that's definitely a risk in some ways, but they obviously see something in both of them that, you know, I would be the reason why they hired him. When you look at, obviously, there's going to be changes defensively, just like there are offensively, a little bit different. It's, you know, they had different seasons last year. We know the personnel is a little bit different there. But when you just kind of look at a roster from a whole, and again, we haven't seen anything yet, so we're clearly playing the speculation game. But you know, how much of a risk would you put it, just to put it in perspective here, is it for this team to have coordinators that don't have that experience on both sides of the football?
That's a really good question. You know, and I think when you look at the history of it, you know, first-year coordinators can be big swings, like knock-out-of-the-park type stuff, or they can be, you know, you're striking out. So I think it really depends on your confidence in the individual, and I think it's going to depend on David Blau and Durante Jones. And I think they're very different. You know, Durante Jones has this dearth of experience. He's been all over the place. He's lived in his car. He's coached in college and high school and the NFL, and he's developed all these different teaching philosophies. And David Blau's a little bit different. You know, he's kind of the whiz kid coming in. And so I think the thing that gives me confidence is when you talk to them and when you hear them speak at the press conference, the thing that they understand what coaching is, and coaching is ultimately teaching. And like when you hear David Blau talk about the benefits of under center, the benefits of the tight formations, like all that stuff is right on. And it's right in the vein of what good offenses are doing in the NFL. And when you look at Brian Flores and what he did and what Durante Jones was exposed to in Minnesota, like, to me, that's one of the best defensive systems that nobody's talking about in the NFL. And so, like, if you want to bring that philosophy here, like, let's do it. And I think the thing that gets me excited about Durante is the teaching background. Like, when you hear him talk about breaking things down and making make sense and making it apply to the players, like, that's what coaching is. So it's a great question. Like, you know, two first-year coordinators, the success rate's probably all over the place. But I do – the guys that are in the seats now have answered the questions that they can answer in a positive way, which is exciting for me.
Yeah. Talking to Logan Paulson here, you know, and you mentioned obviously the offensive coaching staff that you got to be a part of with, well, then there were Redskins obviously at that point, and that Kyle Shanahan, really Mike Shanahan coaching tree as that's gone down. I mean, you look at just the experience that somebody like a Durante Jones has built up. It's not just Brian Flores. I mean, he's worked with Vance Joseph and Marvin Lewis and Mike Zimmer, a lot of these different ones. So I think that's what just kind of gives me a lot of a feeling of hope for this defense to improve, is just that it's Brian Flores and that defense that a lot of people love, that was certainly aggressive. And, you know, we know all the things they were able to do. But I mean, Durante Jones has spent time with so many other coaches too, where obviously the hope is he can take a little bit of parts and a little bit, Logan, from like every single one of those coordinators, knowing what worked and kind of build his own system that people haven't seen, but also some aspects that maybe have worked and been successful.
Yeah. And I think the really cool thing for me when I look at that tree is it's a bunch of guys that were really innovative from a pressure standpoint. Obviously, Brian Flores is one of the most aggressive blitzing coaches in the NFL, right? And the stuff he's doing is really innovative in terms of how aggressive he is with pressure. But then you look at, you know, Zimmer and what he did in Minnesota. I remember, you know, playing against him and being in Chicago and looking at the film and looking at the third down pressure packages, and he was doing things that no one else was doing and putting you in pressure, putting the offense under pressure in ways that no one else was doing. So I look at those two coaches and I say to myself, like, man, he's seen what the cutting edge of blitzing looks like. And I can't wait for him to bring that philosophy here. Because ultimately, like when you look at defense and what makes it good, it's how you affect the quarterback. And he's seen two defenses that have done it better than anybody. And so I think that's the thing that gets me really excited for him. So hopefully, yeah, like you're saying, he can draw a little bit from Flores, from Joseph, from Zimmer, and kind of get everything they need in here to elevate the personnel that they've done a great job of assembling.
What do you think Durante Jones will bring just specifically to that secondary? Because we know there's certainly some young talent there, especially a corner, but we've seen the inconsistencies there.
Yeah, I think the thing that I look at with that group is when you look at Minnesota, like they don't ask those corners to do a whole lot. And so obviously, like, Fred Smoot is a guy that I work with really closely, and he played here under a defense that brought a ton of pressure. And I think the thing, like, when you talk to corners that play in these kind of zero, all out, hyper effective, hyper aggressive defenses, it really limits the way the offense can attack you, right? So I look at the young players, obviously Mikey, Trey Amos, and I say to myself, like, what are they good at? They've got really good ball skills, and they are really good at playing with vision of the quarterback. When you look at the Minnesota team and how they ran their defense there, the thing that sticks out to me kind of first and foremost is the corners have their feet in concrete. They're standing at 8 yards. They're reading the receiver through to the quarterback because they trust with 100% certainty that whatever pressure they are bringing is going to get home. And so, like, I think you're just with young cornerback groups, like, the best thing you can do for them is limit their exposure, limit what they have to defend, limit what they have to think about. And I think this defense does a really good job of that.
You think we'll see Sanders still more on the outside now?
I mean, I think, you know, with good football players, you're going to put him in multiple spots. You know, I think obviously he has a skill set like we've seen, or the fan base has seen here over the last couple weeks of last season, where he's very efficient on the perimeter, right? And I think in this defense, he can play on the perimeter. They're not going to ask him to kind of be this shutdown perimeter guy. It's like, play with vision. Let's get our hands on footballs and turn the football over. I think he's really good at that. But I also think, like, when you watch him in the slot, there are some limitations there with how he fits the run, but he's still a heck of a football player. Like, you know, he's just got this kind of rugged mentality to him when he plays on the interior. So I just want him on the field as much as I can. And again, I know last season didn't live up to expectations, but the entire defense didn't live up to expectations. And I'm hoping that with Durante Jones coming in here as a teacher, he'll be able to maximize, again, Mikey Sanders' skill set.
Talking to Logan Paulson, Chick Okonkwo is one of the guys that I'm really excited about to see in this offense. Obviously, you know the position well. What do you expect from him in this offense, and really what they can do with him and his skill set?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's going to be the most exciting thing with Chig is what can they do, right? Because when you look at the stuff in Tennessee, it's very vanilla is the word I'm going to use. It's like, hey, he's going to run up the seam. We're going to throw a screen to him. He's going to catch a check down and run for a first down. Just looking at the movement skills and the movement dexterity, and he's shown a little bit of this at OTAs, like just a more diverse profile, but like, I want to see more. I want to see what you can do with him because, you know, he's a 4-5 guy. He's very competitive. He's tough with the football in his hands. I think he has maybe not like receiver route running chops, but definitely above average route running chops for a tight end. And when you look at the league and how everyone's moving to 12 and 13 personnels and what that does to defense in terms of fixing and kind of dictating personnel, I think you can put him in a really good spot to be a weapon here. Now, he's got to show it. He's got to earn it. But he does feel like, looking at the stuff from Tennessee, he's on kind of this ascension trajectory, which gets me excited for his role in this offense.
You think they're going to add another receiver?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I mean, they've obviously tried at numerous occasions, like in free agency, obviously, with the kid from Indianapolis and Dobbs and all these different pieces. So I think it's on their mind as an area that they need to improve on. I just think, you know, obviously, when you look at Diggs, for example, I think everyone's like, oh, yeah, we should sign Diggs. But I think a lot of teams are thinking that same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to be a little bit more expensive than people want to admit. So it'll be interesting to see how they progress with that. Obviously, there's another name that floats around there quite a bit, and Brandon Ayuk. We'll see what goes on with that. But I definitely think it's on their mind. It just, I think, is it the right fit? Is it the right person and personality for this team?
I was trying not to mention his name, but you did it, so it's your fault.
It's okay, right? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, it's just every possible junction, his name comes up anyway.
I mean, let's be honest, until there's a solution to that, that's always going to be the question that's there. And I mean, I get it. Like, I mean, it is what it is. And this team could certainly, you know, they're going to be looped into that. Before you go, it's NFC and it's not Commanders. So I look at the NFC. I think the NFC feels pretty wide open. It's like Rams and everybody else to me. And I know we could poke holes with a lot of different teams. Obviously, the Rams went all in with the Myles Garrett trade. And that, you know, when you look at the NFC as a whole now, I mean, the Eagles are certainly going to have questions, at least at quarterback, until that's answered with Jalen Hurts, if it's ever answered. And the 49ers have gotten a little older and there's injuries. And we're good on the list of all that. But I don't know. To me, Logan, I look at the NFC and see, look, not a spot where the Commanders may be like a two seed, but I do feel like that if this team can stay relatively healthy like they did a couple of years ago, there is a path for this team not only to get to the playoffs, but maybe even win a playoff game. I just, the NFC doesn't feel as deep as the AFC does right now. And even long term, if you look at it, the AFC, a lot of young quarterbacks paired with a lot of good defenses. The NFC is a little bit different in that sense to me.
Yeah, I think you did a good job there of like alluding to kind of the fluctuation in talent in the division or in the conference of last, even the last couple of weeks, you know, in terms of AJ Brown leaving, all those types of things. So I agree. I think that's the fun thing about the NFL is you do like the schedule release, which I'm sure you were a part of, and you're like, oh my gosh, look at this, and everybody's here, yes. Right? But like people get nicked up, coaching changes don't work out the way you think. So I'm with you, man. I do think there's a space here, but again, you know, coaches got to coach, players got to play, and we got to stay healthy and put our best foot forward here.
Yeah, I looked at the beginning of that schedule. I was live on the air going, oh my God, I knew some of these games, but it feels like a lot front-ended. But then, again, that's the thing with the schedule. I've done so many schedule release shows over the years, and it's like, we don't know. We don't know this time of year, Logan. You don't know. Right. You mentioned the injuries, and we're like, well, they got Atlanta later. What if Atlanta's good? I don't know. Like, so, yeah, it's like we play these games, and it's fun to look at win totals, and yeah, I'll take the over on their win totals. Logan, in the end, we know nothing. So I'm glad you said that because it really is just a dumb game that we play, but we fall into the trap, it feels like, every year.
Well, so we got to have something to talk about, right? You know, like you said, the NFL does a good job staying relevant year-round, and the schedule release has become one of those events we just have to talk about. So,
and listen, the NFL is a drug we all need injected into our veins. Logan Paulson, Take Command Podcast. Good to talk to you, buddy. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
I'm not a big college baseball guy, but we got ourselves a barn burner right now. And I know this NFL song has nothing to do with it, this Sunday Night Football.
Slugfest.
I mean,
out in Athens, Georgia.
Dude, it's 10-10 now. Mississippi State scored 6 runs in the second. Georgia scored 5 in the fourth, 4 more in the fifth. This is a wild game, dude. I know you're watching it right now. I'm not College World Series, not totally my thing, though. Game Day Garage will be in Omaha with a couple of couple of great people covering that. Make sure you check that out, Game Day Garage, on all the socials and on YouTube. Wes, this is a game right now, dude.
Dude, I used to have to broadcast a lot of these games at school. They would take forever. 15-run innings, then the other team scores 8. But this is great because both of them are, you know, they're coming back. You're down by 6, you come back. You take the lead, then Mississippi State scored, went back-to-back home runs to tie the game at 9. Now they're both tied at 10. It's wild.
Well, college bullpens, too, tend to be really bad, right? Like, that's generally what happens.
Yeah, I would have been
baseball.
A part of one.
So, you what?
Yeah. I was going to be a part of one, and then I tore my UCL.
So, that's right. I forgot about that. Sorry that happened.
I would have probably had an 8 ERA.
it's 10-10 in the top of the 7th right now for this. Are you a big College World Series guy? Like, do you watch it?
I do watch it. I'm not big. You know, a lot of my friends who I played baseball with who were in college, I would watch their games, but they've all graduated. But I'll watch the College World Series. I think it's a good back and forth. You know, it's good baseball. A lot of these guys are first rounders. Paul Skeens, we saw playing it. He's up in Dylan Cruz played in it, you know, here in Washington. Jack Leiter with Vanderbilt. So it's fun to watch the guys who eventually will be possibly in D.C., but it's not like the World Series or anything like that, obviously.
No, but I will tell you this. College sports in general, there is a surge in popularity for college sports, and college baseball is actually, like, in terms of growing popularity, it's like right at the top.
I've had buddies play in the College World Series. They told me they're not able to explain it. You walk into the stadium. I don't know how many seats it fits. I'm going to think like 30, 40. But it was they said they had a great time. And obviously, you know, your friends are going out. Are they going to get some Jell-O shots at that one bar?
Jell-O shots were discussed. The Game Day Garage coverage will have probably Jell-O shots and a full behind the scenes, a full of what it's like to actually be at the College World Series. So that'll start next week. You'll start seeing that content on social media for Game Day Garage and YouTube and all that. So, yeah, if you're, as you said, right, it's like it's hard to explain. We're going to do the best we can with Game Day Garage to try and explain what it's like at the College World Series. Going to be a different view, though. It's not just going to be talking to players. It's going to be a lot of the other experiences and the tailgating that goes on there, too, as a fan. So
that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. It's a huge
part. You talk about college sports. Not as much college basketball. I mean, I know like Duke and UNC, they tent out to go get their tickets. But obviously college football, you know, not as much here in Maryland, but at Virginia Tech, that's a huge thing with college baseball as well, especially for the World Series. And even, you know, this Georgia-Mississippi State game, they don't joke around with their baseball in the SEC.
You know, that's a great point, is basketball in general does not have that type of culture. NBA, college basketball, because most arenas don't have the space for the tailgating. Right. I would love an NBA arena to try and build that type of culture. You know, like try to have a space for tailgating. But it's hard because, you know, it's an 82-game schedule. It's not as much of an event every single game as football is. So I think it's a little bit harder. That's the advantage football always has. Football has the advantage of being something that, again, I know the NFL is trying to just constantly add games and days of the week and own everything, but it's still always going to feel more like an event than basketball does because you have multiple games a week in the NBA, even in college basketball to a point. I know it's not the same schedule, but it's kind of that way. That's what makes football so great. It's why, just begging the NFL to not start taking over all these Wednesdays and adding an 18th game. Though we all know the
You know what Wednesdays are for? Maction. Don't take away from my Maction time, please.
Let me tell you how little the NFL cares about Maction. It's a complete
it's disappointing.
Zero.
I want to watch my Sam Houston State versus Toledo.
Are you a Maction guy?
I actually am. Yeah. I love college football. I will watch a 13-10 Mid-Atlantic Conference football game.
Good for you. Here's what I've noticed about people that are just diehard college football fans. Majority of them come from college football schools, right? Like you're so inundated with it. Like I started to love college basketball more when I went to George Mason, went to Final Four then, and like it just, you know, you kind of get immersed in that culture. But George Mason doesn't have football. And, you know, going to a school like you did at Virginia Tech, where you've got football, but you've got your Ohio State ties as well, and we never really know truly what you are. Though you should get one of those jerseys that's half Ohio State, half Virginia Tech.
Yes,
like get one of those. Half, do you have one of those?
I don't, but I know what you're talking about. I see those when it, like a mom will have kids on the opposite side of the field. Yeah.
Well, that's what the Kelsey's mom.
Yeah, she does that.
Donna Kelsey? Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, she had like the Havsie jersey. So it's like that's what you need to get. That's the ultimate thing for you is like you went to Virginia Tech, you got the Ohio State ties. But yeah, like you were around college football, so
definitely
you have more of just that passion and those roots for it. And look, college football in college football areas, right, that doesn't have NFL, like that's king. It's regional, but it's massively popular in, you know, SEC country or whatever. Though I will tell you this, get ready because super conferences or a super conference specifically, it's coming. You know that, right?
Oh, 100%. I mean, the reason why there's not a 20... I've done a whole podcast on this with the 24-team playoff. The reason why... They're going to get to it. Mm-hmm. They're just waiting for the SEC and the Big Ten to agree that we'll do 24 teams, which will it will get rid of the conference championship game. So if you like the conference championship games, then you don't want a 24-team playoff. I don't want a 24-team playoff. We just got to the 12. I think it's been amazing. There's always going to be teams who get snubbed. We saw that with Notre Dame last year. You know, you lost two games. You know, that's just how it goes. But I'm enjoying it. I think what they did with the 12-team, it's working. What do you think about having a group of six team in the playoff? We saw two last year with JMU and Tulane because of Duke winning the ACC, but I'm totally cool with having one of those teams in it from, you know, Conference USA.
You know, I think it's good because it kind of resembles March Madness a little bit, but it's hard to do that when JMU got whooped by Oregon, so it's like, you know, it doesn't really use it as a great example. But as you expand here, I think it's good to have some of those programs like that can kind of make it, and eventually you're going to have, eventually, you're going to have some sort of underdog story, some Cinderella story.
Yeah, like Boise State has always been a very solid football
program. It's not going to happen as much in football, though. Like the big programs are just so much better. Yeah, with NIL. So I think it's you can have like one or two, and that's as
one,
far as
one to
really
me.
Go.
I'm good with. I know there's a lot of people who want none.
Yeah,
but then you're really just getting rid of any opportunity for a smaller school to make the playoff. I mean, we had the 4-team playoff. That was too small. Cincinnati made it. Luke Fickle went undefeated, and I think that was great that they got in. But that was once in a blue moon.
Yes. So
with this 12-team playoff, you have seven more spots for power conferences to make the playoff, and then you give one to the smaller schools.
It's, you know, it's, I know what they're trying to do. They're obviously trying to create their own March Madness in some way, and people love underdog stories, and it's just harder in football. It really is. But look, you're never going to have less. You're never going to have fewer baseball games, fewer NBA games. You're never going to have fewer March Madness just expanded. That got bigger. The college football playoff is going to expand. It'll expand again, and you are going to have, I am telling you this because I know this from behind the scenes and conversations I've had with people on the business side of sports, super conferences or a super conference is coming, and it's going to affect college basketball. It's going to affect other things, but all of the money is in college football, and it's in football in general first, and that is going to be a trickle-down effect for everything else moving forward.
Yeah, it's too bad. You know, I grew up in the era where, you know, the ACC, Clemson dominated the ACC. You know, you had the Texas was in the Big 12. Maryland first got into the Big 10. So I'm glad I grew up in that era, but with the amount of money that's involved in college sports and how big the SEC and the Big 10 have gotten, it's going to happen. I mean, you're talking about possibly them leaving NCAA and creating their own kind of association to have a playoff. I mean, that could be in the works. I mean, this could go any direction, not in a good way.
Well, I know that Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, said that there's no talk about a merger with the Big Ten, but again, money changes everything.
Oh, of course.
You know, the thing that you're getting now in terms of the narrative that's public is very different than what's being said behind the scenes.
100%. We do not know with the college landscape and how much has changed in the last 4 years.
Oh my gosh.
Anything is open.
And listen, that NIL money and that, I mean, all of it in general is real. Like, that is something that it's going to continue to be. There is so much money that's being spent, and it's not just spent on players, but it's promoting programs. It's building media arms around actual programs, like making, you know, creating content just for, like, all of this. It's all around these schools and these conferences, and it's, the landscape is changing so fast that college football and college sports in general will continue to look different over the next 5 to 10 years. It's going to be almost unrecognizable as time goes on, and the money is the main reason for it. So I would not be surprised if we see us getting closer and closer to super conferences over the next few years in football. Nick Ashew on The Fan and the Team. There's a video. I think this is real. So I guess there was a tornado warning in some market during the NBA Finals last night. Have somebody taking the complaint calls, and they just put a video out. SportsCenter put this on Instagram. That's great. Look, here's the thing. If there's a tornado warning or something, you're going to get these. You're going to get these storm warnings in the middle of a game. It's just going to happen. It's never going to change. People always get mad at this. Like that's you have to do that with local news. This is funny. He's just like, it's above my pay grade. I'm sorry. I can't do anything about it. That's actually brilliant content, Wes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you post so much sports. Here. I want to listen to the complaint.
Can you hear it?
I'm
listening. Listen, I hate to hear that, but, you know, it's above my pay grade. God bless you.
It's above my pay grade. God bless you. And he just hangs up.
That's great.
So you won't stop talking about this, dare I say, obsessed with this obsession movie. Can you just get it out of your system now so I can move on? Because I keep hearing it during the break, and I'm tired of it. So just whatever this movie is.
I just had to get off my chest. I know.
Because you're obsessed with it.
Clearly. I am.
And I don't give any spoilers to people that want to go there, but what is it that you wanted to tell me? Because you won't shut up about it.
Just how crazy she gets. I mean, what she does to one
of her... can tell some of the... I feel like you have to tell some of the story now. You know what? If you want to go see this movie... No, I don't want people to turn away. So tell it the best you can, because you can give something away without the whole thing. It's like a trailer.
Right.
What the hell happened that made you obsessed with obsession?
Her friend has feelings for the main character.
Okay.
And she takes her anger out on a friend. And it goes poorly. It's bad. Like, people were looking away. There's people in the theater. I looked at them, and they were closing their eyes.
Oh, it was like violent type deal?
You ever seen Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Yes.
You remember when, what's his name? what's his name? Main character. Not Leo.
Do your job, Wes. Doing a great job.
It's not Leo. Who's the other one?
I mean, this is your story. You've got to tell it.
You know, when they went into the house and he killed all the intruders?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah, it was something like that.
Okay. Okay. Listen, you're doing your best to not like totally spoil it, and I respect that.
It's bad.
Okay. Like, you're giving it up. I will actually say it's a decent tease with what you actually did. You stumbled through it, but you gave a decent tease as to what actually happened in this movie enough where it makes people want to see it. Unless you don't like violence, and it sounds like.
Yeah, if you don't like violence, go watch, I don't know, go watch this Mississippi game, Mississippi State Georgia game.
What's the score on it now? I don't have it up in front
of me. Let's see. It is. 11-10 Mississippi State.
God.
And Georgia will come back.
This is, I mean, yeah, dude. Listen, college baseball is, I mean, you can have anything happen once you start getting those 100%. Bullpens.
But yeah, I'm not going to watch this movie again. I once is enough for me.
Are you somebody that likes these like overly violent movies though? Yeah.
No, I like war movies, historical ones. That show events, but this type of horror, this thriller, nah, it's not for me. I was forced to go to it.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, at times you have to, you know, do it. So
you were on a date and you had to give in to that, didn't you?
Yep.
Yep. I mean, listen, it happens, buddy. And you did the right thing, but it sounds like you're a little traumatized by it.
I woke up this morning. There was a scene that I slightly looked away from, and once I woke up. And
was it this scene or was it a different scene?
Yes, it was a scene.
Okay.
I watched it once the light was out, the sun was out, and I knew I was safe because we watched it. I watched it at night because I watched cut the last 30 seconds. I saw Wimby fumble the ball out of bounds. He threw it at his teammate and then his missed shot. So it was nighttime when I watched this. But once the sun was up and I was in the office safe, I rewatched that scene and it's bad.
Would you like find it on YouTube or something?
Reddit.
Oh, you went and just found it on Reddit. People pirating this stuff. Hollywood's having enough trouble. We don't need to be pirating stuff on Reddit now, too. You are part of the problem.
It is so bad that they have to make it fuzzy before you click on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how bad it is.
Yeah, it just doesn't. That kind of stuff just doesn't really do it for me. I don't need it. It's like the first season of Reacher. Have you ever watched the show Reacher?
Yes, I have. Great I like show. Reacher.
Great show. But I will say this. The first season is nuts. The first season is the most violent of all the seasons of the show, and it is a great show.
Especially when they walk in the house.
The bad guys that they deal with in that first season are like the most just insanely awful, inhuman people with what they do to people and their victims, essentially. And I'll leave it at that. But like, that's what I like. That was the point where I'm like, yo, I don't need to. Like, that's enough. There's things being chopped off and fed to people that don't need to be, and I'm giving away enough there. Don't need that. Like, I'm fine with that. Listen, I can watch violent movie stuff blowing up. All that. There's a certain point though where I'm like, you know, I don't really need this.
Yeah.
And it sounds like what you're describing in this movie is kind of one of those like, I don't need that.
There's two main characters. And the guy and the girl, when she gets, like, there's a second person that enters her. I don't know how to explain it, but
did you just say enters her?
Like, there's like a demon in her.
Oh, you think about what you just said.
Okay, yes, I understand what I just said. But there's a demon inside of her, but sometimes she snaps out of it, and she realizes what is going on, and the demon in her was sleeping, and the real part of her was talking to her friend, saying, "This is not me. This is not me. I need you to kill me."
Okay. You are not, I tell you what, you're not selling this movie to me, that's for sure. This is kind of like.
She's sleeping.
Just, no thanks.
Kill me.
No thanks. I mean, this is, again, like, I guess you need the shock factor.
I have never been in a movie theater that was so silent. when she was sleeping, but the real part of her was actually awake, talking to her friend to kill her.
Yeah, I think I'll yeah. I'll be honest with you. This gives me nightmares just thinking about it. Not for me. I'd rather go rewatch the end of Knicks Spurs last night. I think that's better. It's a better thing to watch. Unless you're Victor Wembanyama.
The guy wanted to date her. The main character wanted to date, you know, the other main character. And the real part of her was telling her guy friend, I'm not dating you. Like, the real me is not dating you. Like, this is not real. You need to kill me.
This is insanity. Who comes up with something like this?
See, those are the people that you have to watch out for. The writers of movies like this.
Honestly, yeah, man. Or I don't know what gummies they popped. A little combination, a little mushrooms, a little weed, just kind of together. And it's like, I got a great idea. I would actually love to sit in one of those writer rooms and just watch the process for something like this. Because you got
to
be...
I want you to watch this movie.
No, I'm not watching it.
There's
no way.
During the day.
It doesn't matter. You're not selling this to me at all. There's a million other things that I could consume that are far better than this that's going to sit and live in my dreams. I don't need it. I've seen enough scary movies in my life. I've seen enough things in real life. I don't need it. There's enough bad stuff in the world. This doesn't do it for me.
You know what movie I hate? The Purge.
I never watched that either.
I hate movies that are semi-realistic.
Right. Like,
you know, movies
I
like
don't need to see that.
It's kind of corny. It's, you know, I don't really care. But The Purge, that could be real. That's partially real.
Listen, the world's crazy enough. I don't need more stuff about crazy. And I watch a lot of sci-fi stuff, end of the world movies or whatever, like all those. But like, there's a difference between that and then just like the overly violent, just for the hell of it. Like, I just don't. It's not for me. It just doesn't work. And I don't know what that says about me. Probably means that I might say more about people that like that kind of stuff. But it is what it is. So you have not sold the movie to me. Thank you, Wes. I will not be going to see it. I promise you that. Actually, the only movies I want to go see in theaters anywhere are big, you know, superhero movies or anything like that. That's the only stuff that's worth seeing in theaters anyway. So,
and Mickey, I know you're a big Mickey Mouse guy.
Big Mickey Mouse guy. Let's go. Is there a Mickey Mouse movie coming out?
I know, but there's a SpongeBob movie. Did you see that?
So what's the Mickey Mouse about? You just for the hell of it, you just said it?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure there's a Mickey Mouse movie coming out.
Good God, you've derailed everything. This is what Wes does. Nick Ashew on the Fan of the Team. Oh, I will say this. Wes has not sold that stupid Obsession movie to me at all. There is no way I will ever watch that. That's for damn sure. Nick Ashew on the Fan
After
of the Team.
After that little tease I just gave you?
Yeah, you put something in my ear. I don't want to hear a clip. It's The Exorcist. It sounds like you're just talking about The Exorcist, and that's it. I'm done. I don't want to hear any more about the psychotic movie. It sounds like really what it is you just need therapy after... Get it out of my... I don't want to hear it. just stop. Like, it sounds like you need therapy after the movie you saw last night, and you're trying to lay it all on me, and I got
nothing
for you.
It's not fair that I had to live through that.
Yes, it's not fair. And you know what? You had to make the sacrifice for the date, and that's your own fault. You had to deal with it. I got to watch Nick Spurs, and I feel good about it. And that is what's in my head. Victor Wembanyama turning the ball over last night late, looking like a team that... that's fine. It was a nightmare for you last night, and it was a nightmare for Spurs fans, and there you go. And you know what? I bet Spurs fans would probably rather watch Victor Wembanyama turn that ball over again late the way that he did as compared to this stupid Obsession movie that you're obsessed with from last night. So you're going to have to talk to a therapist about it. I got nothing else for you. It sounds just creepy and disgusting, and I'm not there. It's not me. I will never be that person that wants... I have had this before. I had a friend of mine years ago, and... He put a movie, we were over at like friend's house, just kind of hanging out. I was like, let's watch this movie, whatever. Like, he already knew what was coming, and he loved like real creepy, scary movies, had no idea. And I don't remember what this movie was. It was like these kids, and they're all hanging out, and it's in high school, and it's stupid. They're all like, go to a friend's house, and all of a sudden, they're just like playing a game. And it's like, what are they doing? And all of a sudden, somebody just stabs someone in the head and smashes their head open. And it goes from like normal movie, like, what's this about, to... this type of movie you watched last night. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm not watching this. I didn't need that. I didn't need it. You wanted the shock value and you got it. That's it. And none of this does it for me at all. I would much rather have Miles Garrett chase me down and tackle me than watch this damn movie. That's what I'd rather have.
So you would rather have the physical harm than the mental harm?
I think so. Yeah, I think
that's
would.
Fair.
I would rather take that. I'll tell you what, the Rams though, and this is how you segue out of that nonsense, my friend. Rams are the team to beat in the NFC, man, aren't they? And we talked to Logan Paulson earlier. Like, I know, I think the NFC is wide open beyond the Rams. Even with like the 49ers winning 12 games last year, listen, their offseason was not spectacular, and they're a little bit older now. And it's if Brock Purdy is healthy, that offense is one of the best in the NFL. We saw it last year, especially when he got back around week 11, I think, from that injury. And we saw how that offense took off, but they've got to stay healthy. Christian McCaffrey's going to be a year older, and at what point does that drop-off happen? The Eagles have plenty of questions. I don't care. They traded A.J. Brown. We all knew that was going to happen. Is Jalen Hurts a quarterback that they can count on? Is Saquon Barkley going to get closer? It's not going to be a 2,000-yard Saquon Barkley, but is Saquon Barkley going to get back to at least somebody that they can count on consistently with a new offensive coordinator, a new play calling? I think Philadelphia's got a ton of questions. Chicago, all right, they won their division 12 games, or win 11 games last year, and you do all this. It's like, well, okay, that's year one. Plus, now Caleb Williams is on the cover of Madden, so they're probably going to regress because we all know the Madden curse is real. Just ask Saquon Barkley in last year. So, you know, as you start looking through the NFC as things move forward, I think there is an opportunity for the Commanders, if they stay healthy, to be in the thick of the playoff picture. And I think that's as far as it obviously goes at this point right now with them, because we have, there's plenty of questions for that team. But again, Seattle, they won 14 games. They win the Super Bowl. But they lost a whole bunch of key pieces to their defense. They lost their offensive coordinator. They lost the Super Bowl MVP in Kenneth Walker. They have their own level of questions. Green Bay, do we trust Green Bay? They were 9-7 last year. Jordan Love is all over the place. The Vikings, okay. Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray in that offense with Kevin O'Connell could be good. Could be. But we still have questions there. The Lions, are the Lions going to continue to be an 8-9 win team now? Is the best of the Lions already passed them by? And then there's Tampa. And you know, you start going to like, people are loving the Cowboys again. How many times have we seen this Dallas Cowboys love that's out there? Every year, this is the year for the Cowboys. Okay, yeah, they had a good draft. But that they were a 7-win team last year, with a head coach that nobody wanted, and nobody wanted that job. That's the reason why Brian Schottenheimer is the head coach of the Cowboys. Oh, you think Jarrah actually wanted to have Brian Schottenheimer as his head coach? Of course he didn't. Nobody wanted the job. And there's a reason why, because they're a mess every year. So all I'm saying is the NFC, after the Rams, massive questions with literally every team that's involved. Yeah, is Seattle a playoff team? Of course. As long as they're healthy, yes, I believe they're a playoff team. The Eagles a playoff team? Yes. The 49ers, yes. The Packers, yes, but they've got to show that they're going to get more consistent play out of, you know, Jordan Love, and he's got to stay healthy. And there's a lot of the NFC just feels like there's a lot more up for grabs over the next couple of seasons versus the AFC, where you could look around and go, well, Denver's got, as long as Bo Nix gets back healthy from that injury, defense, and now they add Jalen Waddle, and that's basically the same team as last year. The Patriots, same thing, elite defense. Now they've added to their offense, and they've got Drake May, and, you know, Well, maybe not your Texans, Wes. I think that might be.
What?
Yeah. Listen, I don't know. CJ Stroud needs to remember how to play quarterback. So there's that. But there's a lot more. I mean, the Chargers, and there's still the Bills with Josh Allen, and the Jaguars might be legit. They won 13 games last year. Liam Cohen may have actually figured that thing out. The AFC just feels a lot more crowded with, hey, if the Bengals get a healthy Joe Burrow, we know they're a playoff team. So I think there's a lot more that's up for grabs in the NFC versus the AFC, where it's going to be crowded for a long, long time. So we'll see. We'll talk to Michael Jenkins next. Nick Ashew on The Fan.